Hi, I'm Andrew Connell, and in this module,
we're going to talk about one of the two different endpoints in the Azure Billing REST API. This one's about rate card. First, we're going to do an overview of the Azure Billing API, and then we're going to dive into the details of the rate card API. I'm going to talk about some of the different scenarios of where you could actually take advantage of the rate card API and how it could benefit your applications. Then we'll look at the REST API request details for using the rate card API, and then we'll look at the response details that come back from it. These are fairly sizable responses, and so we need to understand all the different components available. So let's first do an overview of the Azure Billing API. The Azure Billing API was introduced in June 2015 by Microsoft. It consists of two different components, the rate card API and the usage API. The rate card API is what we're going to refer to in this module. The resource usage API part of the billing API is something we'll look at in the next module. Now, at the present time of this recording, which is in mid-2016, the APIs are still in preview. Now, they're mostly in preview between the V1 and V2 usage data and the response that comes back. This is specifically around the differences between the Azure Service Manager and the Azure Resource Manager, different between ASM and ARM that we have inside of Azure, and the changes in the shift that Microsoft is making in Azure over to ARM. This doesn't really affect us too much in the rate card API. In fact, it doesn't affect us at all. But again, just keep in mind that it's preview, and so some things you see here may change from when the service goes to generally available. Another thing that you need to keep in mind is that billing data can change at any time and without notice. Now, generally speaking, Microsoft does make announcements on when billing model changes will happen and when they will take effect. You're usually given a good solid notice of at least a few weeks or a few months of when we'll see those changes take effect. But the changes are not going to be announced in the API. Instead, they're announced through Microsoft's other announcement channels with Azure. Instead, just the rate card API will always show you what the rates are at the present time. But as you'll see in the responses, we actually get an effective date on when those rates were effective. Now, Microsoft's recommendation is to use the GUIs to identify entities and not their names. You'll see in many places when we deal with the rate card API that we have different things called meters, and these different meters have names. You don't want to refer to the names in your systems if you're keeping your own copy of this stuff. You want to refer to the actual meter IDs or the IDs that are coming back. That's what's referred to in other APIs, such as the usage API, when we are referring to specific things that are being billed. So now let's talk about the rate card API, one of two different components in the Azure Billing REST API. The Azure Rate Card API is primarily given to you to give you a detailed price list for all the different Azure resources. You can not only look at it for the different Azure resources, but you can also look at things across different regions, for different locales, and for different currencies. You must have a valid Azure subscription in order to query the Rate Card REST API. It only responds to HTTP GET requests. It doesn't respond to letting you post anything or trying to make any changes to it. You also have to be authenticated. So what you're going to have to do is build a custom application and then register an application inside of the Azure Active Directory or Azure AD and give that application rights. And we'll look at that later when we talk about some custom dev stuff. The Rate Card API is available as a REST API. There is no managed layer around it, at least at the time of this recording. That may change down the road, but in preview and where we are now in mid-June 2016, it's available as a standard REST API that follows all of Microsoft's standard REST specifications. Now, when we refer to the different things that we can price out, in Azure, when we actually create things for use, like an Azure website or a Azure SQL database or Azure storage, we call these things resources inside of Azure. Well, when it comes to billing, we call these things meters. So you can think of an Azure resource as also an Azure meter. A meter is the way that we're going to actually measure this and how we're going to bill for it. These different meters, this is how we refer to it in the Azure Billing API, both for rate card and for usage. Now, each meter billing can be different based on different factors. For instance, the Azure offer that's tied with the Azure subscription can impact it. For example, we have a pay-as-you-go Azure offer, which is the one that you can get and just pay for things as you consume them. Other offers that you may find are included credits that you get with an MSDN subscription or with Microsoft's startup plan called BizSpark. And there's a bunch of other opportunities that are available for different offers, for different discounts and different things. You may get different meters back based on those different things. So one of the things you're going to have to pass across, as you'll see when you make the request, is what offer you want pricing data for. A meter can also be different based on the different regions. For example, Azure's region of East US may have a different pricing model for certain features than, say, the Azure Japan, one of the Japan data centers, or Japan regions. So you want to take that into account. Some regions and some data centers in different regions have higher costs, and so the pricing model is a little bit different. In addition, the currency can be different as well. So you're going to pass across a request for the different currency options for in Azure, and it will tell you what the different pricing models will be. Some models have various pricing checkpoints based on consumption. For example, if I have something like, say, Azure Storage, it's going to charge me a per gigabyte fee per gigabyte that I store for every for the amount of data that I store up to 1 terabyte. But for the next 49 terabytes, it's going to charge a per gigabyte fee, but at a lower rate. So you get a bit of a discount for more data that you store. The same thing is true for many other different metrics that you'll find across Azure. So you may see multiple meters, multiple pricing ranges come back, and you have to figure out where that pricing works. Now you'll pay one rate for the smaller amount, and you'll pay another rate for the higher amount. So I would pay one rate for the first terabyte of storage that I have, and then I would pay a second rate for the next 49 terabytes that I have, and so on and so forth. Now these numbers I'm using, while they are examples from real pricing things, don't take my word for it that things are billed at first terabyte and the next 49 terabytes, because again, pricing can change. I'm just using that as an example. In addition, some meters actually have some free consumption that's built into them. Like say the first 50 gigs are gigabytes of data stored in Azure Storage is free. And that may or may not be the case. I'm just using it as an example. Other offers are actually provided that give you free things. For example, if you want to do an Azure web application or an Azure web app, you have to pay per web app, but you can also pick the free option where each subscription is allowed to have up to 10 free options there. Now let's talk a little bit about the authentication and authorization, or the security story, for the Azure Billing REST APIs. Now, when you want to query the Azure Billing REST APIs, what you're going to need to do is to create a custom application that's going to be registered in Azure AD. This application that's registered in Azure AD must be granted the permission, Access Azure Service Management as organization, must be granted that permission, otherwise referred to as a scope, for the role called Windows Azure Service Manager. The custom app or the user must be granted access to the Azure subscription. So once I've created the application, I then have to go tell the Azure subscription that that application from Azure AD is allowed to access that subscription and do stuff with it. So in Azure, as we referred to in other parts of this module when we talked about, or in other parts of this course, where we've talked about ARM and the RBAC-based security, role-based access security, there are three default roles that are added to every Azure subscription. There's owner, there's contributor, and there's reader. The application that's going to read from the Azure Billing API must be in one of those roles. So it can be reader, that's just fine, but it needs to be in at least one of those. So what you'll do is go into Azure, the Azure Management Portal, you pick a subscription, and on the pane or the blade that shows you information about the subscription, you're going to click on the little icon in the top right corner where looks like two little people, and you're going to add a new user to an existing role. I would recommend use the reader role for this because that's the only permission it really needs. Add it to the reader role, and you're going to search for the application by name as you registered it in Azure AD. In addition, the user that's using the application must have access to the Azure subscription. Now, all requests to the Azure REST API must be authenticated by including a valid OAuth2 bearer token in the header. So you're going to follow the standard model of authenticating an application, as we've talked about in other parts of this course, where your application is going to go to Azure AD's token endpoint and authenticate and obtain a valid access token to be able to talk to the Azure Management APIs. You don't need to go exchange this token with Partner Center to get a Partner Center token, because this has nothing to do with Partner Center. This is just going to be a pure Azure thing. So you get a OAuth token for that endpoint, for the Azure Service Manager's endpoint or the Management API endpoint. You're going to include that in the header of your HTTP requests. You're going to use the authorization header, and you're going to pass in the value of bearer, space, and then the access token. Now, one thing to keep in mind is that all requests are being throttled or rate limited when you're making requests using the Azure Management APIs. The Azure Billing APIs, including RateCard, are part of the bigger Azure Resource Manager API. Now, the limits that we have published are that there's a maximum of maximum ARM REST API HTTP GET requests of 15,000 requests per hour. Now, that number is going to be limited based on the subscription. So you want to keep track of how many requests you're making and make sure that you're not making too many requests where you're going to start being throttled and some of your requests are going to be declined. Certain Azure limits do have a default limit and then they have a maximum limit. And in order to go from the default limit up to the maximum limit, you have to create a service request, but it doesn't cost anything. It's free. It's included. You just have to make the request that you get your limits bumped up. In this case, that's a moot point. It doesn't really matter because the default and the max are both at 15,000 per hour. Now, one of the nice things here is that all responses that you get from the Azure REST API are going to include a header value with the remaining reads that you have left. And that's the x-ms-rate-limit-remaining-subscription-reads. It's quite a mouthful. But that'll give you a number less than 15,000 of how many reads you have remaining for this subscription. So you want to keep track of that in your responses. If you're writing an application that's quite chatty with the Azure Management API, you're going to want to monitor that and make sure that you're not going over that limit. Now let's talk about some of the different enabling scenarios that we can do and create using the Azure RateCard API. Some of the scenarios that are enabled with the RateCard API are allowing you to build an application that's going to automatically update a locally cached price list that you're using inside your storefront as a partner. So you may be creating your own application that's going to show different pricing information for customers. And instead of going and making the call to the Azure endpoint to making all those different requests, because maybe you're only interested in certain Azure resources, and so you don't want the full response to come back. You want to make it a little bit more optimized and performant. You may keep your own copy of the rate card information. Another option that you can do is you can use this to calculate estimates or an anticipated bill for your customers. Maybe you want to create a nice fancy pricing calculator. Maybe you want to perform some spending analysis. Maybe you want to look and see what they're spending and how trends are going with their consumption and use it in conjunction with the resource usage API to see what their resource usage consumption trends have been over the last few months. And you could forecast what those trends are going to be and how much it's going to cost by using the data that you have and the RateCard API. You could also do a whole multitude of what-if scenarios, like asking the question of, what if we moved our resources from the East US to the West Europe region? Or what if we switched from hot storage to cold storage? Or what if we changed the size of our virtual machine instances? Or what if we changed the Azure subscription offer? There's a whole bunch of things that this is going to enable, different scenarios that you could come up with here. So what we have in this module is a sample application that we've built. It's an ASP.NET MVC application that's going to call the Azure Billing REST API. So you can see what a real .NET application would look like and what would be involved in the authentication process, making the request, and handling and displaying the response. It's just an example reference application. So it's up to you if you want to use this for your own applications. But let's take a second here and let's take a look at this application and see what it does, just to kind of get our bearings around this. Okay, so the first step here is to get our application configured. So here I have the source code for the application all loaded. But the challenge that we have here is that I need to go configure this so it'll work. And as you see here, that it's got a little bit of information in the web config that's not filled in. This is specifically not filled in to protect you, so not sharing your credentials to your application. So I want to show you the full story of how to get this application up and running. What you're going to do is you're going to need to navigate over to your Azure Management Portal. So here I'm in my Azure Management Portal, and I'm in my Azure subscription, and I'm in the section where I've picked Active Directory, and then I've picked the Applications tab in Active Directory and filtered it to show me all the applications that I own. So what I want to do is create a new application. So I'm going to pick add, and I'm going to say, I'm going to pick and add an application my organization is developing. So I'm going to go ahead and give my application a name. I'll just call it the Azure Billing Explorer. And then it's going to ask me for my sign-on URL. Well, let's go grab that from our project in Visual Studio. So I'm going to pick the project name. I'm going to go over here to Properties and grab the SSL endpoint and copy that. And then come back over to my project or my application in Visual Studio, in the Azure Management Portal, and drop it in. Now I need to give it a unique ID. So I'm going to use the domain of one of my Azure subscriptions and just add on something unique on the end of it. And that's a good thing. So we'll go ahead and just hit the check mark and let it go ahead and create this. All right, now that it's created, we need to go grab a little bit of information here. So first, I'm going to come over here and say view endpoints. The first thing I need is the domain and the ID of my Azure AD tenant. So I'm going to go ahead and pick view endpoints. I'm just going to copy one of these values out. And then I'm going to come back over here in here to Visual Studio. Now, let's switch this over into full screen mode. I'm going to drop that into the tenant ID. When I paste that in, now when I paste this in, I want to go back and get rid of everything except for the GUID, because the GUID is the actual ID of my Azure AD tenant. So let's go ahead and select all these values, and I'll go ahead and get rid of all of them. So there's my ID of my Azure AD tenant. I'm also going to go and paste in the domain. This is just one of the registered domains on that Azure AD tenant. Now let's pass in the client ID and secret. So we got to go back over to our browser, and I'm going to scroll down to find the ID of my application that was created. So here's my client ID. So I'm going to go ahead and click on this little icon over here and then come back over to Visual Studio and paste that in for the client ID. The last thing I need is the client secret. So let's jump back over to our Azure portal, and I'm going to create a new key, set it for any random duration, 1 or 2 years, it doesn't matter. And then I'm going to click save. Now what this is going to do is it's going to create a new key, and it's going to show me the key after it creates it. I need to make sure that I copy this out and I paste it somewhere, because once I've seen this, the next time that page loads in the Azure Management Portal, it will not show me my key again. So now the application is configured, but I need to go in Visual Studio it is. But I need to go grant this application access to have certain permissions that my application is going to need. So I'm going to scroll down a little bit farther, and I'm going to find the section for permissions to other applications. I need to add an application, and I need to find the Azure Service Management application. So I'll pick that, and I hit a check mark, and I need to give it the permission of access Azure Service Management as an organization. Once I do that and click save, now when I log into the application, when I log into my ASP.NET application, it's going to go to Azure AD and request an access token that's intended for the Azure Service Management REST API. Because I've given the application access to that API, and because I have permission to it, it will give me a token. If I don't do that, then if I didn't create this permission here, I would get an error saying that this application doesn't have rights to do that. Now, just because I've gone through and created an application in code, it's all been configured to work with an application I created here in Azure AD, the last step is I need to give the Azure AD application the permissions to be able to access one of my Azure subscriptions. So what I have over here is I've gone to the other Azure portal, the more Blade version of the portal. This is the current production one. And I have to grant it permissions to this application, or I grant the application permissions to this Azure subscription. I couldn't do this in the old portal because the old portal doesn't support the role-based access control. I couldn't have created the application in the new portal because the new portal at the time of this recording didn't support Azure AD. So I'm going to come over here and click on this little, these two little icons here to bring up the users pane. And then I'm going to click add to add a new role, to add a new user. Now the role that this user is going to have is just a reader, because our application is simply going to read. And then I'm going to pick from the different users. We called our application something with the word Azure in it. There it is, the Azure Billing API Explorer. When I click select here and then click OK, it'll now give us our application right here, to where now the application has access to this Azure subscription. So now I should be able to go to Visual Studio. Let's get out of full screen. Hit F5 to go ahead and start building the application. And then we just wait for a second to go ahead and let it load the very first time. And here we go, we're already logged in because we were logged in to our Azure Management Portal using our Azure AD account to go do all the management and creation of the application and manage the permissions. Now what I can do here is I can look at rates and I can look at usage. So first thing we're gonna do is we have to pick a subscription. So I'm gonna go over here and click on the View Subscriptions. What this page did is it reached out to the Azure Management Portal's REST API interface and it asked for a list of all the subscriptions. Because this application only has access to the one subscription we granted it access to, that's the only one that's gonna show up here. So I'm only gonna see one thing listed. If I had added it to other subscriptions, they would show up here as well. I didn't ask it for a specific subscription, I just said, give me access to everything that I have, that you know about. And so it gave me access to everything that I have permissions to. Now, if I click on View Rates, this application is then gonna reach out to the rate card API, and it's gonna pull all the subscription information in for all the rate information for the Azure for an Azure offer. Here you can see the actual offer that we're using, and then I've also got some other stuff to filter the request. We've gone with a couple defaults, like the region is United States and the locale is ENUS. This region's gonna specify the currency of US dollars as well. Here's the Azure subscription. There's the name of it, it's called a monetary credit. The credit that we have here is $200, and it's been effective since November the 1st of 2013. You see here the meter region is blank, and that's because there are certain things inside of this rate card response that are specific to specific meters, or specific regions. So some meters have certain values, and we don't want to have a global value of the meter region. So here I can just start scrolling down and look at a couple of these different meters, and they're all listed out. I can jump to a meter category and see all the results of them. Here, I'll just pick one, just so we can see. Here's one meter that we've written out. There's the name of the meter. There's the ID. We can see how it's billed. In this case, it's billed in units. The region is blank. That means that this pricing applies to all regions. It's not specific to one region. And here, the number of units, when it says zero, that means that there's no real breakpoint in here. So if I have one, two, three, whatever units, you really are only gonna go through and have access to the developer management API. So you only get one of those. You don't buy multiple units of those. In this case here, you see it's just zero and you pay $49 US dollars a month. And it's been effective since February the 1st, 2014. We can also change the filters here to where I can jump to a different offer. Like in this case, let's go to the 12-month commitment. You can see that 0026. And let's look at it for, say, the United Kingdom, and we will do EN-GB for Great Britain. So we could change these different values here to pick different things. Now let's take a look at the request details for the rate card API. Before doing that, though, let's go back and let's look at our application. And let's look at what a request looks like, the real raw request that we're being made, so we can have some context when we start to talk about some of the different details inside of this API. So here I'm on the list of all my subscriptions. I'm gonna click on View Rates, which is gonna trigger a request for some default information on an Azure subscription. So it's using my Azure subscription you see listed here, and then it's using the offer ID of 0044-P. And we can see the value of that is 0044, that is the free trial offer that you can see listed here. All right, the region is United States. That's also gonna set my currency. And the way I want the response to come back is ENUS. I want it back in US English. I could change it to Spanish if I wanted to by using ES-US. I can change the to an offer. Let's change to a different offer. Let's switch over to the pay-as-you-go and we'll switch it to ES-US. All right, so now we just made the request, things are different. You can definitely see that it's coming back now as all the responses coming back as Spanish. All right, so let's come back and let's go in Fiddler and let's take a look and see what this looks like. So here at the very beginning, I'm having to get a list of all my subscriptions. So there's localhost, I'm on my current ASP.NET project looking for the subscriptions. That in turn is gonna request an access token from Azure AD. So here I'm going to do an HTTP post. You can see there's a post to the token endpoint. So if I come over here to the header view, a little bit easier to see if I click on this. So there we have going to the login.microsoftonline.com to the endpoint for the Azure AD token endpoint, and I'm going to pass along some data. So if I go over here and look at the raw view, you'll see that I'm passing across some data as a URL encoded form. So if I come over here to the web forms, make it a little bit easier to see this, you can see in the body request, I'm making a request for an access token for the resource management.azure.com. That's the endpoint that I'm going to go to. Tokens are specific, are only valid for specific endpoints. The client ID and secret is my login for the application. And then the grant type, the way I'm getting my OAuth token, is using the client credentials. So I'm not logging in as a user, the application is logging in. And now I'm getting my token. I'm going to use that token then to go make a request to the Azure Management API to his subscriptions endpoint using the API version of 2014/0401. And I can see here that I got an okay response with some JSON data. And if I go over to my JSON viewer, I can see that there's the only subscription that came back for me, which is what we saw in the browser. Now, the next thing I want to do is I want to make a request for the rate card information. So here I'm going to, on my website, the subscriptions/the ID/rates. And that's going to then internally go grab all the rate information for a specific subscription. So that's where this request is right here. If I look at the header view for this, I can see an HTTP GET. Let's move the response out of the way. An HTTP GET to a subscription endpoint, specifically for that subscription GUID, using the Azure provider of Microsoft.commerce, and I'm using the rate card endpoint. Now, all the rest of this info is easy to see if I switch over to view web forms. So there, the API version is the API for the billing API. There's my filter attribute, and that filter is going to be filtering on a specific offer ID of 0044P for a specific currency, for a specific region, and I want the data to come back as US English. Remember, we made a change in the second request we made, which is this last one, to 0003P. That's the one for the pay-as-you-go. But I told it I wanted the data to come back in Spanish. So we'll look at what the responses look like instead, and later on in this module. Instead, let's switch back over to the slides and let's talk a little bit about the details of this request that we just made. Now, for the request details for the rate card REST API, all requests must include two HTTP headers. You have to have the authorization header, which is going to specify the OAuth2 bearer token to authenticate the request. And you're going to have to specify the content type, which is going to tell the server what kind of data we're expecting and what kind of data we would be submitting to it. And that's going to be application/JSON. You're going to include the reference to an Azure subscription that we want to use. And you're going to do that by passing the GUID of the subscription in the URL. And you're then going to include two required parameters and the query string. You're going to include the API version, which you see in all the different Azure REST APIs. You have to include the version of the API that you're looking for as a query string value. This is a common parameter for all Azure APIs to control the version of the API that you're requesting. And then you're also going to have to pass across another parameter called filter or dollar filter. And this is going to allow you to control the data set that's returned. Now, the filter parameter only supports two different logical operators, equals and the keyword and. Let's take a look and see what a standard request looks like. So I've broken this up into two pieces here. We're going to first look at the request and then we'll look at what the filter looks like because it's a little bit longer and I want to be able to explore it in its own. I'm going to issue an HTTP GET to the endpoint https://management.azure.com. That's the core endpoint for the Azure REST APIs. Then I'm going to go to the /subscriptions/subscription ID, and I'm going to pass in the GUID of my subscription that I'm querying against. Then I'm going to say /providers/Microsoft Commerce. So what I've done so far is I filter my request to give Azure some context that I'm making a request against my specific subscription, and then I'm using the provider called Microsoft Commerce. The specific endpoint is /rate card. Then I'm going to pass across the query string values of API version, and at the time of this recording, we're using the 2015-June-01-preview API. You have to include that value. Then I'm going to pass across another value called $filter, and included in my HTTP request are two header values, the authorization, and the content type. Now let's look at what the filter looks like. So $filter has to include four different parameters. The first parameter is offer durable ID. Offer durable ID is going to be the ID of the Azure offer that I'm interested in. Currency is the three character code for the currency I'm interested in. So for example, for the United States, it would be USD for United States dollars. Locale, that's going to be the four character code for the locale I'm interested in, how I want the response to be formatted. So for instance, EN-US for US English. And region info is a two character code for the country that I'm interested in the request. So here's a little bit more detail on the different parameters. The offer durable ID has to be a string, and it's going to look like something like ms-azr- and then the code of the Azure offer. And there's a link there that you see a list of all the different Azure offers. So for example, 003Q is the pay-as-you-go. Currency is going to conform to the ISO 42:17:2015 standard currency codes. So USD is United States dollars, EUR is the euro. Locale is the four character code for the locale of how you want the response to be encoded. So in here, I'm using United States English, or FR-CA is French Canadian. And then the region info is an ISO 3166-1 standard country code. US is United States, CO is Colombia, DE is Germany, etc., etc. So let's take a look at a few different example requests. This request is making a request for the Azure pay-as-you-go offer. It's asking for data to come back, all the currency information to come back in US dollars. It wants the response to be formatted in US English, and I'm interested in data coming from for the United States region. In this case here, the offer ID that I'm interested in is called the monetary credit, and all the other information is the same as the previous request. In this request, you see that I'm getting rates for an offer called Azure Pass. That's 0121P. There's multiple Azure Pass offers, so this is one you definitely want to look at and find out which one your subscription falls under. The currency, I'm interested in euros. I want to get the response to come back in German, and I'm interested in getting data for the from Germany. Now that we've seen what the request looks like, let's spend a little bit more time in detail, and let's look at how a .NET application is going to issue the request, create the request, and send it over to the rate card API. Okay, now that we've looked at what a request looks like, let's look at the details about this. So when we left off, we had these requests that we had here. Here's the first one that we made using these different filter values. So we have a specific API, and then we had a specific ID. Let's look at the code of how this was implemented. So I'm gonna switch back over to Visual Studio, and let's stop our application. Now, what this does is that we have a controller here. Coming to our controllers, we're going to trace through this. We have a controller that's saying, give me a list of all the information. So this is our index controller, index viewer. This is really the only one that we're using, the only action we have. We have to pass in a subscription ID, and you see here that if we don't, we're going to redirect them back to the default subscriptions controller so that you have to pick a subscription first. So that's coming across in the URL. The different values coming across in the URL, we have a custom route. I'll just show you that one really quick. You see here we have a custom route here, mapping a route to subscriptions / subscription ID, passing in a controller and action. And we specify the default action is equal to index. So that subscription ID, that's how it's getting that ID in this controller. We're also going to pick some default information. So if you don't give me a filter, we're going to start with the offer ID of 0044P, the region of United States and the locale of English US. So that's how you saw that first request. That's why that was the default value that we got. Now, some of the stuff are a couple little helpers we have. So these pieces right here for all the offers and the regions and locales, I have a couple different services that I've created here. So we have an Azure offer service, a region service, and a locale service. And all those are just giving me back a generic list that I can take those values back. And if you scroll down a little bit here, you'll see that in a view model we're creating, we're just creating selected list items to create those dropdowns that you saw on the page to be able to filter things based on specific regions and specific locales and specific offers. You see, the other thing we're doing with our offer is I'm specifying the subscription ID, the offer ID, the region ID, and the locale ID. So that's all pretty basic stuff. We're looking for something, if I scroll down a little bit, we're looking for our rate information. That's the big thing we want. So here's the code in the view in the controller that does that. And we're going to look at each one of these methods in just a minute. You see here I'm calling a method on a new repository that I've created called my Azure Rates repository.getRates. And what that's doing here is it's creating the view model, or it's creating a view model, and it's going to specify the subscription ID, the offer ID, the region, and the locale. Let's remember, we're just looking at the request here. We're going to look at the response later on in the module. So let's look at how we build up this request. So what I'm going to do is I'll come over here and my get rates. Let's go. I'm going to jump over to the definition of this method. Now, what we're going to do first is we're going to go first request an Azure AD token. Now, there's a little class here that I've provided in this project that goes and gets the token for us. You can take a look at this on your own time if you like, but all it's really doing is it's checking to see if I already have a token, and if I don't, it's going to go out to the token endpoint and request the token using the client ID and secret that's defined in my web config. It's doing it for this specific resource ID, and in my settings helper class, if I come back over here and show you the definition of this, you'll see that my Azure Management API resource is pointing to the management.azure.com. Okay. Now I've got my access token. So here we're going to go set up the request. I'm going to create a new HTTP client and set the accept header equal to application/JSON and set the authorization header equal to bearer/access token. I'm then going to go through and create the query. So the query is going to start by saying subscriptions, and then I'm going to pass in at the end of the subscription, I'm going to say, here's the subscription ID. Then I'm going to specify the provider I'm interested in, and then the rate, the actual endpoint. You see here the rest of it, I'm setting the API version equal to this value right here, the preview API. I'm then gonna go in and specify the dollar filter parameter equal to all these different filter values, like the durable ID, the offer durable ID, the currency, the locale, and the region info. And with that, I'm then gonna replace each one of these different values in the string. I'm then going to go through and build up my query by saying, go to the Azure Management API endpoint and add on this value that I want to make the request to. So you see here, if I look at the definition for this, you'll see that this is actually the resource ID. So if I scroll up actually a little bit here, you'll see that I'm using the actual resource ID and then adding something on to the end of it. That end of it is our query path that we're passing in. And then I'm issuing the request, just an HTTP GET, passing it across, using the query, and then that's where it's gonna kick over and start handing off the response. We'll look at how the response is done in just a minute. Now that we've looked at what the request looks like, now let's get to the meat of the subject here and let's find out what the response looks like. So we're gonna do the response details. Before we dive in and look at the details of the response, let's take a look at what the response actually looks like that comes back from the rate card API. Okay, let's take a look at the response. And we're gonna look at it just from an overview perspective, just to get an idea of the kind of data we're gonna get back, because we're gonna jump back to the slides and talk about it in detail before we then switch over and come back to our demo and look at the actual detailed response. So if you recall, we made a request for all rate information for an offer 0044P for US dollars. The region was United States, and the locale is ENUS. Now, here's the response that came back. We have an HTTP 200, which shows that everything looks good. Let's scroll this up a little bit, give us more room. If you recall from the slides, we also have this rate limit remaining subscription read. So you can see I have a number of responses or requests that I can still make. But remember from the slides, everything is rate limited. So then here's the value of all the rest of the stuff that came back. So you see I have a lot of data that's going to come back that's all JSON. This is a little hard to read here, so we're going to switch over to the JSON view. What that's going to do is parse out the results. So here you can see the locale is in English, Is tax included is set to false and the currency is in dollars? The offer term is going to have a bunch of stuff in here for me. In this case here, we have an effective date. So all the pricing information you see here is effective as of November the 1st, 2013. And, or for this offer is effective November the 1st, 2013. It's got a credit of $200 because remember our request was in US dollars. It says so up here. The name of it is a monetary credit. And then we have these excluded meter IDs. And you'll see there's a lot of them listed here. I'll talk more about what these are in the slides in just a minute. Let's look at what one of our meters looks like. So here I'm going to open up one of our meters. Here we can see that this meter is named Compute Hours. It's in the category of virtual machines, and we can see it's for a standard D4 sized virtual machine running Windows. This meter has an ID. It has an effective date of when this rate was effective as of October the 1st, 2015. You can see that this is also effective in the East US data center. So we may have other options here. We may see the same meter showing up in multiple places. Not all of these are sorted either. We can do that in code. But we may have other meters here for this exact same meter category and meter name and subcategory. But it would have a different meter ID, and it would have a different meter region, which could also have different rates. We know that the thing is being measured in hours. And if I come over here to meter rates, you can see the 0 equals 2.111. What that means is we are billing every hour with no kind of tiered pricing or no kind of tiered usage. So it's not like if you have one price for the first 10 hours, one price for the next 10 hours, et cetera, et cetera. When you see zero equals this, that means, and there's only one listed, it's just one flat rate, no matter what your consumption is. So here, my rate is $2.11 for per hour running this VM. I'll just jump and grab another one of these at random and see if we have anything different. This one is standard S3 secondary database day. So this is a SQL database, so standard S3 size database. You can see SQL database right there. It's under data services. Nothing included. This price has been effective since November the 1st, 2014. His rates, it's $4, in days. It's $4.10, almost 11 cents per day to run this, it looks like. And that's for the Japan East data center. Okay. We can go look at the other response that we had for this. If I come down here and select this one, we'll see things are a little bit different, right? So in this case here, remember my request, if I scroll up at the top again, my request was to get the data back in Spanish, in US Spanish. So here you can see the subcategories, the meter region, the name, the category, all these things are coming back in Spanish. Even the units coming back in Spanish. So you can see here that things are a little bit different. Now the rate card API has some fairly large responses that come back. Even with all the filters that you specify, responses are going to be quite big. Greater than a meg, 1 megabyte. I've seen them up to 1.7 megabytes. So they can be fairly big. And you want to make sure that you are either caching these responses or you're storing them locally in some way. Because making these requests, not only are you going against your API limits that you can make against the ARM API, but it also can be quite expensive. Now, the response is going to be broken up into three main sections. There's the main metadata about the request or the response that comes back. There's some details about the actual offer that you specified. And then there's a collection of all the different meters that are available. So let's look at each one of these in detail. The first section on metadata is going to contain some information about the request that we made. For example, the currency is going to be set to whatever the request was, as is the locale. So here I've got the currency set to US dollars, and the locale that came back is saying that the response is in English, US English. Now there's another property called is tax included. Now this is an interesting one because the value of this is always going to be false. The reason why it's always going to be false is because all rates that are provided in the rate card API are all pre-tax rates. They don't have taxes included in them. So you want to factor that in. The meter region may come back as empty, or it may come back with a specific region if all the meters are going to have this exact same value. And then finally, you have a collection of tags that may come back as well, which are just name value pairs for the subscription. This may show up, this may not show up. You see there is listed as optional. You then have a section on the offer terms. So this is going to be details about the specific offer that you're interested in. Now, the first part is the name of the offer. So you may have things like monetary credit or monetary commitment. Another thing that you're going to have there is a credit. Now, the credit is the amount of credit provided under the terms of the given offer level. This is only used when the offer terms are, or the offer name and term is of type monetary commitment. The effective date is a date in which the meter rate offer term is effective. The tiered discount is a list of key value pairs for tiered rates. This is only used when the offer terms are of type monetary commitment. So the way it works is you get a bunch of name value pairs. The key part, or the name, is going to be the actual price, and the value is the discount percentage. So if it says up to, like, say $100,000, the key would be $100,000. And then the value would be some percentage of what the discount is for spending that much money. The excluded meter IDs is an array of strings, which are really just meter IDs or GUIDs that are excluded from the given offer terms, like the excluded credit. So they're not listed. There's no flag on each one of the meters that says that they're excluded from the discount. Instead, the ones that are excluded are listed up here at the top level. Now let's look at the real piece, the section on meters. Now you're going to have a whole bunch of meters that come back. This is the bulk of your response. So we're going to look at just one of these and kind of explain how this works. The meter ID is the unique GUID or ID of the meter. And this is the thing that you're going to want to make sure you keep track of. The meter name is the category and a subcategory of the meter. So the meter name, category, and subcategory is going to help you identify what this is and what kind of group that it goes into. The unit is the amount of measure, or the unit of measure that's used to price the meter. It's used and it's related to the meter rates field that you see below and the included quantity, and it's going to match what the usage is that you'll find in the usage API that we'll look at in another module. Meter rates is a list of key value pairs for rates. There may only be one rate, but there may be multiple. The key part is the meter quantity, and the value is the corresponding price. So in this case here, it's just saying that for every hour, so the zero is the first value there, every hour is charged at 71 cents per hour. So I can see it by meter rates and unit. I can tell that this is the unit of measure is hours. So for every hour, it's 71 cents. The meter region is the location where the meter is available. If this value is empty or it's not present, then it's the same price across all regions. Note that some locations have special conditions. For instance, for a time, the end of your regions are only available for volume license customers. So you may not even see it show up here. Some stuff might even show up here, or some regions not get listed. You may see meters with the same name and categories listed. These are different rates per region. The effective date is the date the pricing was effective, and the included quantity is the amount of consumption in units that will incur no price. This is the free part. Think of this like the first 2 gigs are free. Now that we've seen what the rate card API looks like on the slides, let's go back to the demo and let's see what the .NET code looks like to take the response, how we can handle it, and how we can render it out to the screen for viewing purposes. Now, when we left off, we were looking at our repository that was making the requests. So we were looking at our rates repository. And let's see, he was making a call. Here you can see we made the call right here to go get all the rate information. So what I did is I'm grabbing that response and I'm going to pull the response out that we got back into a raw response string. So this is just some string. Now, to make this easier to work with, what I've done is I've created an object that represents the actual data that comes back from Azure. I created a strongly typed object called the Azure Rate Card HTTP response, and I'm using JSON.NET to deserialize that string into this strongly typed object. The way you do that is fairly simple. You just go make one request, get a look at what all of this JSON looks like, copy it to the clipboard, come back over to Visual Studio, and you create a new class, and then inside that class, which I'll just do, say, right here, I would say edit, paste special, paste JSON as classes. And what that does is it gives me this big raw thing here. Now, I've got a bunch of stuff here. I can't really do it right now because I didn't copy valid JSON. I just grabbed a portion of it. But instead, what that did is I created that and left that right here, rate card responses. So you can see here, I gave mine my rate card response, and I took all the values of the default values for this. So here we have like offer terms, we have meters. An offer term is a collection of different terms. It really is just one value when we get the response, but we could have multiple values. So here we have name, credit, tiered discount, meter IDs, which is just an array of strings. And then here's all the detail about my actual meter itself. Notice here that the region may come back as empty. And if it came back as empty, I wanted to tell JSON.NET, how should you handle it when nothing comes back for that field? And I just say, well, just ignore it. Just leave that as a nulled out field. Okay, so we got our data back. So let's go back to our rate repository. We've got our data back and we handed that back to the caller. Now remember, our caller was the controller. So let's go back to our rate controller and let's look and see what we did here. So where's our rating information? Here we go. So we got our rate information. Now here what I said is, if we got any offer terms back, then go update the view model with those terms, with the offer terms, so that we can actually bind to this very easily. So I like to have a view model. This is just my style. You don't have to do it this way. But I like to have a view model that's really the go-between between my view and the controller. And my controller's job is really just to pull values out of the view and put values back in. So here, my meter region, we're going to set that one. We'll set the text included. And then what I did is I have a meters collection, which is just an array of all my different meters. And here I just went through all my meters and just added them all up. So here's the adding a range. And I added them all, but I sorted them this time because, as you saw, nothing was sorted. I'm sorting them by the category of the meter, then the subcategory, and then the name, and then the region. And so that way, when my application runs, if I have a virtual machine that has different rates in different regions, I can see all the different rates grouped together in one section. And then I return the view model. Now the view for this just goes and presents this data. And this isn't an ASP.NET module, and this could take a lot of time to go through that. So I'm not gonna go through all of that piece to it. But I showed you in a previous demo how the code actually, how the view was rendered out. If you wanna look at the view, it's really, it's pretty simple. It's right here in the index.cshtml. There's a lot more stuff there, all right, that you can take a look at. But we're gonna skip that for this module instead. So with that, you should have a pretty good view of how to make a request and what the response looks like that comes back from the rate card Azure Billing REST API. In this module, we looked at one of the two different APIs in the Azure Billing API. Specifically, we looked at the rate card API. We then looked at some of the different enabling scenarios that this API would allow you to do inside your organization. We then took some time to look at the details around the request for the rate card API, and then we looked at the response that came back, and we looked at his details and how to handle those. I hope you enjoyed this module, and watch other modules in the CSP Developer Training course.